Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur, episode 44, recorded Monday, January 23rd, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Ford, featuring all-electric and hybrid electric technologies. Learn more about the technologies Ford is bringing to its vehicles at Ford.com/technology. Welcome to The Social Hour from Petaluma headquarters of TWiT. In Petaluma, California, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I guess I can call it the Canadian headquarters for TWiT.
Yes. It's funny. I say that every show, and I never quite say it the same way each time. It's one day, I guess I'll have an open that sticks. Until then, you never know what I'm going to say, Amber.
You keep us on our toes, Sarah. That's why people keep coming back for more. You never know.
I'm glad. Well, I vow never to to get stale. You'll never know what I'm saying next. It'll always be a surprise. So, Amber, how are you?
I'm doing really well. Can't complain. It is a really strange day in Toronto today in the sense that it is raining. It feels like spring. Leo and I used to joke all the time about patio weather in Canada when people started sitting outside and having drinks. It's not quite there yet. However, just a bit of a change from last week where we had some really nice snow. As much as I like the warmth, I feel like January, you know, it's okay to be cold. And clearly the climate is somewhat confused in the northern part of the world right now.
It's a little bit confused where we are too. It really hadn't rained the entire winter season, which we're well into, and it was odd. You know, the Sierras, Tahoe, people have ski houses. They go up there. There's no snow. It's just very weird. And now it won't stop. I mean, it doesn't snow around here. It's just rain. But it's that wet winter weather that we usually get sporadically, but we've sort of had in this long rainy spell, and I am kind of tired of it.
You're tired. You're ready for sunshine.
Yeah. It's just nice to get a little of everything. Too much sunshine, then I'll complain about that. Too much rain, too wet.
So you're never happy, Sarah. You're never happy.
It's true.
It's becoming very difficult.
Impossible to please. So, Amber, this is it feels like an old story at this point, just because it had so much momentum, so much coverage, so much press. Last week, including entire websites that went down in favor of it. But that is the SOPA PIPA revolution that went on online. I'm going to assume that people watching The Social Hour are familiar with both of these bills that were introduced into the U.S. Senate and House of Representatives, two separate bills, but had a lot of the same goals in mind to stop online piracy. But as many people felt, took away too many rights as a result. Pretty big deal as far as social sharing via social networks, Amber, don't you think?
Yeah, you know, I think this is just an example of a story that reached the mainstream media, clearly because so many people were talking about it online. And then you had the protests like Wikipedia going dark for the day and many other websites as well. And so I think it's a pretty amazing how fast this fizzled, Sarah. And I would argue it was because of much of the momentum online and some of these big internet companies really standing up against these bills. So I think it's good for all of us as internet users. I'm not sure that they are gone forever as far as people wanting to try to get them back in place. But I think the good news is, to see these kind of get that momentum behind people protesting against them and see how quickly that happened.
Yeah, absolutely. I was sort of, on one hand, I can be a little bit of a Scrooge maybe when it comes to things like changing a Twitter avatar or putting a little banner on a website that everybody else is doing. Not because I don't think it's ever a good idea, but sometimes it feels to me that it's a little bit of a herd mentality where if a few people do it, then a few other people do it, but not necessarily for the right reasons, just because it's kind of cool. And that bothered me a little bit when it came to some of these protests, but I had to look past that because the whole idea of this is these are government bills, which, I mean, majority of cases, a big part of at least the American public just has no idea what's being passed through Congress or potentially passed through Congress. And in many ways, people feel very left out and, that's just, you know, politicians are doing their thing and it'll affect us and we might complain about it, but it's sort of out of our hands. And it's totally not. And this is a really, really good indication of how if enough people voice opposition, they actually can get things turned around. Even if politicians don't agree with the people they're representing, they realize that these people are the ones that will, you know, keep them in office or, you know, we have the power to change their path's course too. So it's it goes both ways.
Yeah, you know, it was funny when sites like Wikipedia had gone dark, I had forgotten how much I relied on those sites. And even though I knew all of this was happening, I found myself going to Wikipedia probably 3 or 4 times that day. And, you know, there's a little tease and then everything went dark. And you realize that, you know, it was great to have some of these big internet companies really step up during that time. And I'm sure that helped push things in more into the mainstream as well and helped to get rid of these bills more quickly.
Absolutely. Well, definitely, if it's a hot button issue for you, do not assume that SOPA and or PIPA are dead. These are the sorts of things that can come back in other forms with bills that are worded differently. Maybe they're called something else. You know, nobody wants to hear SOPA anymore, but what if it's called RIPA? Then you got to read it all over again. You know, there's a lot of this stuff, you know, it can come back again. So stay vigilant. Internet and keep up the good fight for what you believe in. Okay, let's move on to some pretty positive news. If you're Tumblr, David Karp was speaking at a conference recently, and he has some pretty positive numbers for the company. Tumblr now reaches 120 million people each month. Now up to 15 billion page views each month. Now, Tumblr has always been a little bit of a, I love Tumblr, Amber. I've had an account for years. I have an account that I post stuff to sporadically, but not that often. It's not where my main blog is, but I know a lot of people who do use Tumblr as their main blog. So it's a little bit of a, you're within the Tumblr ecosystem where I could follow you, Amber, on Tumblr, and I'd see your post in my dashboard along with any posts of anybody else I'm following. I mean, it's very much like Twitter, sort of in that way, just longer form and more multimedia. Or if you were to go to my regular website, as long as my domain is pointing to my Tumblr account, nobody really knows the difference whether you're on Tumblr or not, unless there are other Tumblr users and they're logged in. But I don't know. I've always liked Tumblr, even though I feel like I don't utilize it as well as I could. I think it's a great service, and I'm happy that what started out as, I guess you could call it, yes, that was the last thing I posted. Not really very relevant anymore, but funny at the time. They seemed like a really small company. Well, they were a really small company back in the day. I mean, I think I signed up for an account in 2007. It was like a two or three person company, and much bigger now. They've raised money, much bigger success story. But David Karp is very young when he founded the company, and he's always struck me as a really smart guy. And I'm happy for Tumblr. I think their success is well deserved.
Yeah, I use Tumblr in the sense that I'll visit Tumblr sites all the time. I haven't really done anything too proactive with creating my own Tumblr account. I've been most impressed, I think, with how some of the brands have also come on board to use Tumblr, particularly in the fashion industry. We see so many different, whether it's a fashion blogger or a company itself who manufactures clothing, they've really latched on to Tumblr. So I think there's some great examples of, I think it's just the ease of use. You know, people can sign on and start using it right away, which so many people absolutely love. So congrats to them. Looks like they're not slowing down anytime soon.
It's interesting. This interview, which was a Digital Life Design Conference that's going on in Munich right now, he says, today, Tumblr is U.S.-centric. 45% of the Tumblr audience is U.S.-based. A little surprising to me, just because I feel like Tumblr is one of those. It's very meme-y. meme-y with dash Y, meaning there's a lot of stuff that gets shared, almost like a BuzzFeed audience, which seems very global to me, but it sounds like they're looking to expand their international presence as well. So best of luck to the Tumblr gang.
Yes, and another story of another service, although they've been well established for a long time, being YouTube. So they've hit 4 billion daily video views, which is absolutely phenomenal. I just can't believe this. According to this article, Sarah, that you found on Reuters, they don't make money off of most of their videos. However, they are monetizing a small percentage of them. And it's interesting to see them kind of play around and experiment with the whole experience on YouTube. And I think really, truly, today they have a great, I think it's Panda, Cosmic Panda. We were playing with it a while ago. The user experience and the whole layout is, I think, much improved over the past couple of months. So not going anywhere soon, Sarah. I'm going to be around for the long haul.
And it's really become the sort of thing where even when we ask our viewers to send us videos for our shows, for this show or other shows on the Twit Network, I'll say, you know, upload a video to YouTube or Vimeo or something else. That's usually what I say. And it's because I don't want to say upload something to YouTube because I don't want to make it seem like that's their only choice. But it is for the vast majority of people who are like, okay, I need to upload a video of whatever length, of whatever quality, easily, quickly. How do I do it? I mean, most people are going to use YouTube. It's just, it's become, it's ubiquitous, really, on the internet. So it doesn't surprise me that they have these kinds of numbers for video views. That said, 4 billion daily, I can't believe it.
It's amazing. I think one thing that the article talks about a little bit, which is particularly interesting, is about YouTube striking these deals to do original programming. We touched on this a little bit last week, Sarah, I think. It was with maybe Hulu. But it'll be fun to watch them roll out some of these original programs, see how they go. They have deals right now with media partners like Madonna and Jay-Z. I haven't seen a lot of this video content. You know, people have been talking for years, is YouTube going to replace television? I don't think that's necessarily going to happen. However, if they roll out more and more of this original programming with some names that are very high profile, it's going to continue to be a really interesting time in sort of the online television experience.
Indeed. And they're not alone. It seems like online programming is the way that so many companies are hoping to, you know, strike it rich. Netflix is getting into the original programming business, yeah, which is almost an HBO competitor. I mean, if you think of what they're doing and the kind of audience that they're hoping to get. YouTube wants to be taken more seriously by, I mean, not that they don't want to have the silly videos that you can just upload in a few seconds, but a destination to find episodic content. And that's just a couple of examples off the top of my head. And that's great. I mean, I love that trend because you and I and everyone who watches our show knows this is all the real deal. I mean, these are real shows, real content, with a lot of people pumping out a lot of great stuff every week or daily. But it's still going to take a while for the general market to realize that this is actually a place that is a competitor to any TV show or movie. Or it's different, but it's still good.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. Sarah, I would love to ask you this question because I was thinking about this a couple of days ago. We both come from broadcast backgrounds as far as our education. We both worked in broadcast television, and now we're kind of doing our own thing, more independent. And I was thinking, you know, if a major broadcaster came to you right now and asked you to come on board and sign on with them, you know, for a salaried job, would you do it, or would you still, you know, would you rather be in the online space? Because I feel like there's been a huge shift where being independent is so much more attractive these days.
Yeah, good question. And my answer, and of course, this is my answer because this is not actually a situation that I'm having to think about seriously. So, of course, every case would be different. But no, I left actually television by choice some years ago, not because I never wanted to return, but because I felt sort of burned out by the model. I felt like, I don't know, it just didn't seem really like why I got into the business. And I'm just really, you know, that's like oversimplification of all the reasons that I end up leaving, but it did. And when I came back into the business after about a year off, online video was just starting to become something that people were doing for a living. And that's, I got lucky enough to be able to get in with Revision 3, where it was a company I worked at 2 companies ago. But, and I may have told this story before on the show, but after Revision 3, I worked at Current, which is a TV station, but also a website and a big digital team. And at the time, I was working for the digital team, but there was sort of this mentality of, because I was producing a lot of original content for their website, this whole kind of like, and if all goes well, maybe we'll run this stuff on the channel.
Yeah.
And it never really happened because the two teams were, you know, one was in LA and one was in San Francisco, long story. But I always remember thinking, you know, it wasn't insulting for it to be, I don't know, put forth that way, but I felt like it was a little old fashioned.
Yeah.
And like, I don't care if my stuff is on your television network, more people will see it online by far, because that happens to be sort of like a niche little cable network that a lot of people don't get. But even if it was broadcast, I don't think that matters to me anymore. I certainly don't think it matters to the audience that, that it used to. I think if you and I were going to host the Today Show, it's like, well, I guess there's some legacy prestige that would be involved with that. But no, it's not a goal. Because here we are doing it right now.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I've been thinking about that a lot because I do still work in broadcast television as an independent contractor, but doing one show and one show only, and I don't think I would ever want to do more than that. So, but that's been a real shift. You know, when I was in journalism school, the idea that someone from, you know, ABC or CNN, whatever, email me would be so exciting. And now it's, you know, we definitely are in such a different state. And one thing that I think is really exciting, and I know we're going to talk about this, I think that's our next story, is Google Plus and their Hangouts. And so many interesting things happening there that, you know, we really can see this convergence happening in a real way today in 2012.
Yes, absolutely. Before we get to our Google Plus story, I just want to remind everybody, we talked about sending videos. Well, if you wanted to send a video that you uploaded to YouTube or Vimeo or whatever video uploading site of your choice is, just email it to us. Email us the link to where the video is hosted at The Social Hour at twit.tv. And a reminder that we shoot The Social Hour live on Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. So if you're watching us live, yay, good to have you. And if you're not, try to watch us live sometime. If you can swing it, if not, you know where to find us, twit.tv/TSH. That is where we live online. All episodes, all of our archives, show notes, links for everything that we talk about in each and every show. You can watch our videos straight from the particular episode pages. You can find us at our YouTube account. YouTube.com/twit is where all of our shows live, so you can subscribe that way. You can find us on iTunes. And subscription links are on all of our episode pages, so we make it as easy as possible for you to watch the show. And by golly, if you don't want to watch, or you do like commuting and audio is better, we have audio feeds as well. All right, let's move on to more news. A lot of social news this week.
Yes, there is no shortage. So this is really interesting. President Barack Obama is going to be doing a live Google Plus Hangout. I believe it's on January 30th. Mm-hmm. Now, Sarah, is this like a State of the Union type of thing? Are people going to be able to interact with him?
Well, okay, so the State of the Union happens tomorrow, I believe, the 24th. So that will, I mean, State of the Unions are the president speaking and, you know, it's not an interactive type of a thing. It's a monologue, really. And I think the idea is that on the following Monday, so a week from today, January 30th, the president will be involved in a Google Plus Hangout. It's a partnership with YouTube, so people who have watched the State of the Union address and either have questions for the president or comments or something else can submit those video, submit that video feedback, which then will be incorporated into the Google Plus Hangout next week, along with, I assume, some lucky people will be able to be part of that live Hangout as well. I think President Obama gets a lot of attention, like, wow, he's the techiest president ever. But then again, there was no Google Plus Hangout when George W. Bush was president. So it's like a lot of this stuff just happens to be having been rolled out during his term. That said, it's really exciting to see how the administration puts it to work.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just looking on the Google Plus page for the White House right now. As far as people submitting their questions, it looks about 131 people have already put in comments and asked some questions. Some of them are a little ridiculous, Sarah, as I'm sure you can imagine. That's kind of par for the course in the online world. But yeah. It really got me thinking when I saw this in our lineup, because last night I went on to Google Plus and I asked my community there if they had any great examples about how people were using Google Plus Hangouts. And within dozens and dozens of comments, I got so many examples and I was kind of blown away. Whether there's a journalist, for example, who's using Google Plus before she goes on air and anchors. There are a bunch of scientists, professionals who focus on science and astronomy who get together and they do a live hangout as well and talk about astronomy. And I mean, the examples go on and on and on. So it seems almost like Hangouts are sort of Google Plus's killer app, if I could frame it that way. What do you think?
I think you're right. In fact, on Twit, we're actually starting to run Trey Ratcliffe's Google Plus Hangouts that he's been doing regularly with a lot of success. People love him. We're calling it, what is it, Trey's Variety Hour? Trey's Variety Hour, Trey Ratcliffe's Variety Hour, or Variety Show. He's hysterical. He's just a really cool guy, and a lot of people on Twit know of him through Google Plus or through our network. He's been on Mostly Photo, and he's that HDR photographer that has these beautiful pictures. But we've definitely seen the value in Hangouts. I'm not sure I knew that they could become a real show when it when it first rolled out. I know Tom and Iaz and I, for Tech News Today, hopped onto a Hangout and talked with each other and watched the cameras switch back and forth and went, oh, that's pretty cool. And then we never really did it again. It's clearly a hit. And if the White House is wanting to participate in a Google Plus Hangout, then the word's out, I suppose.
and Sarah, another comment that I got from someone when I had asked the question about Google Plus Hangouts, they said, "And okay, cover your ears, Sarah. The Dallas Cowboys are using Hangouts to give fans a chance to meet some of the players." And I know you're, I'm sorry, I'm guessing that's a huge competitor, right, to the 49ers?
Yeah, but I was born and bred to hate them. But
okay,
if
okay,
it was my own team, I would think this is really cool. And I'm sure there are some Cowboys fans out there that also feel that way, so.
Anyway, I know. Oh, for all the audio listeners, if you could see the look on Sarah's face right now, she is not a happy girl. Plenty of other examples, too. So I suspect we'll see more and more of this and just some really interesting scenarios for how people are using Hangouts. But also, I think even just with smaller companies, a couple of people mentioned this, where they're starting to do their team meetings via Google Plus Hangouts. So if there's people working from home, it just helps to kind of bring everybody together as well.
Absolutely. So if you're interested, excuse me, starting today, Monday through the 28th, you can visit the White House's YouTube channel to submit questions if you're interested in participating. And then, tomorrow is the State of the Union, which will perhaps bring up a lot of it will spur some of the questions maybe you don't even realize you have yet. So please participate if that's interesting to you, and I will be watching the Hangout, and hopefully I'll see you there. Okay, last week, Apple, big announcement. It was their education announcement last Thursday in New York. And going into it, we knew a fair amount that it was probably going to be about textbooks, schools, how Apple wanted to kind of get into the education game. And now we know that that's indeed true in the form of a new iBook store. It's called iBooks 2 or iBooks Textbooks, depending on who you ask. So that's not only a more robust iBook store that includes textbooks as well as regular fiction, nonfiction, anything that you could have gotten in iBooks before, but an iBooks creator, a creation tool that you can actually get through the App Store on OS X, so Mac App Store, called iBooks Author, which is free. All of this is free. Well, not the books themselves, but the authoring software is completely free. And then a revamped iTunes U, which is an app. It used to just be a part of iTunes, but now it's a standalone app that allows you access. It looks a lot like iBooks, but it's a different app altogether to purchase, rent, sample a variety of university type books. And It's a lot to take in, and it turns out that apparently they've gotten off to at least a solid start. 300,000 textbooks downloaded from Apple's new iBook store in just the past 3 days.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Hey, Sarah, do you know if it's true? And Chris, my boyfriend mentioned this to me about these books. If a user goes in and creates one of these textbooks using Apple software, then Apple owns the rights to the book. So Apple kind of owns everything. Is that because I think I heard people complaining about this a little bit. Have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, well, it's in their EULA. If you read it carefully, a lot of people are a little bit upset about the fact that if you are going to charge within the App Store, Apple's App Store, you cannot then submit the book to another store and get money.
Gotcha.
So, you can think of it a few different ways, but it's restrictive. Apple's basically mm-hmm. saying, you either work with us or we don't want you, mm-hmm. rather than, hey, if you're an author and you've got, particularly in the matter of education, you know, you've got a beautiful chemistry book to share with as many people as possible, you think, well, it shouldn't just be sharing with Apple. That doesn't really make sense. But that's also sort of the way that Apple works, so... kind of disappointing, and some people say, yeah, it's not worth it. Why would I do that? Especially since mm-hmm. Apple's going to be taking a cut, because that's why they're in the business of this. They're not doing it just because they're nice people. So that's the situation. It seems to be ruffling feathers, and then other people don't care as much. I guess just depends on if you think that the iBook store is the only place you really want to sell a book, or if you want more freedom.
Yeah, I mean, I guess people's hands are tied, right? There's no software that exists like this where they can do the same sort of thing and possibly monetize as well as they could within that ecosystem. It just, I think, a bit of a surprise there. But I shouldn't say that I was surprised. I wasn't surprised. I just, you kind of wish it wasn't that way. Nonetheless, obviously a good start, like you said, with more than 300,000 textbooks sold already.
Yeah, it's also the iBook store and... You know, well, I don't have my iPad handy right now, but when I looked through it last Thursday, it's not like there are that many textbooks available yet. Now, when you go through iTunes U, there's a much, much bigger catalog. But I mean, as far as books to buy, 300,000 surprises me because the there isn't a big library yet of textbooks.
Yeah.
So some of that, I'm sure, is just people who are curious, you know, downloading maybe one book and then they'll never download one again. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what the numbers look like in a month, in 6 months, through the rest of the year. But seems like at least a solid start.
All right. So next up for our social tip of the week, I just stumbled across this site right before we started the show, and it's called Story Wheel. And the idea behind the site is it allows you to tell the story behind your photos, particularly your Instagram photos. So if you're a big fan of Instagram, it's really, really simple to use Story Wheel. You just log in using your Instagram credentials. You can then pull in different images from your Instagram account that you want to use, and then you record audio attached to those images and create almost like an interactive slideshow that you can share with your friends. One of the reasons, Sarah, I wanted to include this was just I think it's a kind of a beautiful site and web app that allows you to do this. So just really fun and really easy.
All right. So if I've got my pictures all loaded up, here's a picture I took yesterday from the ballpark. So I'm going to go ahead and choose that in my story. Here's a picture of a church. Here's a funny other picture. So I'll just go in and choose some of the pictures that I've taken lately that I like. Okay. All right. This seems good. I'll go to the next step. Record button. Oh, cool. All right. Go ahead and allow. So now.
Now you're recording, I think.
Oh, that was me yesterday looking over Candlestick Park.
And so, yeah, you can record a little snippet. Yeah.
Okay, cool. You know what? I love this
yeah.
because then you can send it to whoever. What if you took a vacation with the family or something and you just wanted your parents to be able to watch this little... I mean, it's not really a video. Well, it's sort of... It's half video. This is really cool.
Yeah, it's really fun for Instagram enthusiasts. And I think it just adds that context around your images. So if you use it a lot, use Instagram a lot, it's just a fun way to kind of bring those photos to life and also give them a new purpose, right? You know, sometimes you take pictures using Instagram or other apps and then they kind of go away into the ether. And this is just neat because you can kind of put them back into this interactive form that's easily shareable.
So you add a title, you upload and share.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's actually connecting with SoundCloud. That's so cool.
Super, super easy. Again, it was just that, you know, there's lots of these different services out here, but the idea that it was just, it made it, you know, within seconds, you can kind of understand how to get started and yeah. It just takes a couple of minutes.
We have seen, we've either talked about it on this show or I have seen services that are similar to this. You're right, where it's let's do something with these pictures, these videos or whatever that we keep taking and accumulating and putting up everywhere and try to have, you know, thread it together with a nice story. And I think in certain situations, I mean, the pictures that I took that I used there as an example didn't really have anything to do with each other. So that was just me putting something together really quickly. But if you had a vacation or birthday party or, yeah, all sorts of certain events, or even time periods, that sort of thing. That'd be really cool. So storywheel.cc.
Yep.
Get started.
Quick and easy.
And send us, if you put together something really cool, send it to us.
Yeah, that would be really fun.
And we will look at your story wheel.
We'll judge you. We'll grade you.
That's right. No, okay, so our spotlight this week is... Okay, so last week we talked about, it's like, okay, how do I explain this? Because it's sort of complicated. Last week we talked about Google Search plus your world, which was the way that Google had wanted to incorporate more Google Plus results into regular Google Search results, which was upsetting more than a few people and definitely some other companies, namely Twitter, who said, well, wait a second. You're just artificially inflating Google Plus results when, you know, if I was searching for Amber MacArthur, I'd maybe, you know, it'd be her website, her Twitter account, and maybe Google Plus down below a little bit. I mean, Twitter's been around so much longer and you know, you're screwing up real SEO. Well, for better or for worse, Google Plus, your world, Google Search Plus, your world hasn't gone anywhere, but a few engineers, we don't know exactly who, but they're from Twitter, Facebook, and MySpace have created a bookmarklet that skews results back to how, in their words, the algorithm should actually work without sort of human intervention. FocusOnTheUser.org is the website. Really, all you'll see on the website is sort of an explanation of what they're trying to achieve, some examples of how Google Plus people and pages will elevate search results for Hugh Jackman, for example. You know, his first result would be his Google Plus page. Well, they say in many cases, he's not even really on Google Plus, or he hasn't been active, or he doesn't really have that many followers. I mean, he's a famous actor, so he does have a lot of followers on Google Plus, but he also does on Twitter, and he's probably been on Twitter longer. So the idea is okay, if you also say, yeah, Google Plus results are up a little bit too high, the idea is that you should be able to strip it out, and they have a little bookmarklet, which for anybody who's not familiar with those, you kind of drag and drop them to your bookmark folder. They call it Don't Be Evil, which... Hey, okay, well, that's what they decide to call it. But I've got it running on my computer. So if I were to, we'll keep it simple. So we'll go to Google, and I want to search for, Acre Coffee. This might be a weird example, but we'll see. Okay, so, yeah, that is kind of a weird example because there isn't even a Google Plus search result that's opening up. I'll search for Amber. Let's keep it to people. Amber MacArthur. Okay, so sure enough, I've got Amber, your actual website, your personal website is the first result. And then Google is second. Then we go Wikipedia. Then there's actually my Wikipedia page. Oh, because we talk about you in my Wikipedia page. Some images for you. More Google. And then we have Twitter down here. So Twitter's down. It's beneath the fold. Okay, that's the regular Google search. Now, if I choose Don't Be Evil, then... Oh, I think I have to actually kind of like... Don't Be Evil. Okay, so here are the search results as designated by the folks on the user folks. You've got your Twitter account that comes up front and center. And then Wikipedia, Sprouter, TweetFind. Anyway, for better or for worse, the results are pretty different. So I think that this is just an attempt for people to make the point that, listen, Google isn't necessarily... That isn't sort of the end-all, be-all of search results. There are other ways to search for things. And this, I guess, it almost is a little bit of a throwback to the days when Google didn't have necessarily as much of a personal interest in having their own properties at the top of pages.
Mm. Interesting. Well, great for anyone who wants to give it a whirl and get rid of some of those results.
Exactly. And it's worth it that if, for whatever reason, this isn't the right tool for you. And it is, you could see it's like a tiny bit wonky, or maybe it's user error on my part. But this is also something that you can opt out of. If you do have a Google account, you can opt out of the plus searcher world. So a lot of that stuff would be stripped out. But it's the sort of thing that not everybody is going to do. And it's worth remembering that that companies have interests in having results display a certain way. It's not necessarily just math.
It is not. All right, Sarah, so we have a voicemail. I guess we have our viewer and listener feedback now, which is always fun. Looks like we have a couple of good comments and questions.
Yeah, we do. Our first voicemail from Dan, who is a little confused by Twitter chats.
Hey ladies, this is Dan from Calgary, Alberta, Canada. Wanted to get your thoughts on Twitter chats. I'm starting to see more and more people using hashtags on Twitter to have linear chats with the community. I'm thinking, if that's what you want to do, why wouldn't you just use IRC? I mean, it's a medium that's designed for having a linear chat like that. Do you participate in Twitter chats? What do you think? For me, a lot of times they just gunk up my Twitter feeds because I'm getting portions of the chat from other people using that hashtag who I follow, but not the whole thing, and it just seems kind of silly to me. So, want to hear your thoughts? Thanks a lot. Love the show.
Thanks, cool. Dan.
Great question.
Yeah, it's. I think what he's talking about is because you can obviously add a hashtag to any tweet. He means a conversation that's going on back and forth between people, but they're actually they're adding hashtags just so the rest of us know that it's about a particular subject.
Yeah, I think we're seeing more and more of this. I actually am working with a client right now on the social media side who wants to do something like this. We're seeing more of this with organizations, groups of people who maybe decide that 7 p.m. on a Tuesday night, they all want to get together for an hour and have a live conversation. Maybe it's about healthy eating on Twitter, and they use a hashtag so that other people can follow along and they can kind of keep track of that conversation. I would argue the reason they don't use IRC is that many of these people wouldn't even know what IRC is. They would be comfortable on Twitter, but they don't really want to, you know, get involved and sign up for a separate service. And also, there's something that they like about the Twitter experience. You know, 140 characters or less, it's very kind of contained. And then some of those comments are searchable following the conversation that's happened. So I think we're going to see more and more of these. And yeah, it does clutter up your stream a little bit, but there is always the option to stop following.
That's true. I agree with you on IRC. I use IRC regularly. It's a big part of the Twitter experience for many of you as well. But it's not necessarily something that all my friends would, even if they understood how to log onto a particular server and join a particular room that was having a particular conversation, even if they technically could do that, I don't think that they'd want to. And I'm not talking about everybody, but there's a certain amount of people who go, I don't know, this all seems a little too much when you've got something like Twitter. And also, Twitter can be, there are people who use Twitter, and I would say who abuse Twitter sometimes to have a personal conversation, but they like the idea of other people seeing it.
Yes.
And that's not always a bad thing. It just kind of depends on the conversation and the person. But if you are having a back and forth that's a chat that's focused on a subject and you're both using the same hashtag, you know, I as a third party can read that, and that might be good for everybody. It sounds like Dan is probably dealing with a little too much going on in his stream and figuring, why are these people taking it offline?
Yeah.
Or off of my stream or into DMs?
Exactly. I know. And I think, you know, we've talked about services before where you can kind of, I think you can mute even conversations. And there are also services where you can have Twitter like chats that are using sort of a third party service. But I think it's just the ease of use for most people who are on Twitter to be just jump on and say, okay, we're going to, you know, almost like they're spamming everybody for an hour and having a conversation. But I've seen it done well. You know, I've followed along with conversations before where I've learned something and I'm not really actively taking part in it, but I just, you know, click on the hashtag and get a sense of what others are saying. So I don't think it's going to go away anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree. There are definitely third-party services that you can mute a conversation, you can mute a person. I use Proxlet on my web experience. It doesn't actually work on Twitter for my mobile applications, but I have muted people on occasion, not because they're not good people, but maybe they just kind of go off on a tangent, or maybe they're going to be they're going on a vacation and they're just tweeting a lot, and I think I'd rather digest this another time. I don't need it to be in my stream right now, and I'm trying to learn about some news story. Or and then you can also you can mute certain keywords. I know. Actually, last year, a good number of my friends who weren't going to South by Southwest ended up muting South by Southwest. And so they kept saying to us, make sure you tag your tweet South by Southwest because we don't want to read them, which sounds kind of silly, but it's like they wanted actually me to help them not feel sort of left out, I guess.
Yeah. No, it makes sense.
I don't want to see it. So.
So we have an email here from Jude. Hi, Amber and Sarah. One question I have regarding social media is how to get a seamless look and feel across different platforms. I have a website, Twitter, Google+, and Facebook. Do you recommend working with a designer to create backgrounds and other graphics to tie each of these sites together? If so, can you recommend a resource, or is this something that you suggest a DIY approach? Thanks, and good luck in 2012, Jude. What do you think, Sarah?
I think, Jude, that whenever possible, if you have some sort of a brand, if you have a brand, like if you're a business and you have a brand, you may very well have a logo, and then that's something that is a really good starting point where maybe your Twitter background, and you have to size it a certain way because obviously the Twitter stream's in the middle, but you can upload a background. So maybe you've got your nice logo and URL and address and phone number, whatever you would want to share with people. On the page. So anybody, whoever goes to your profile page gets that. And maybe that's the same logo that's in, a banner, or on a landing page for your site. If you have a Tumblr log on Tumblr, for example, you might incorporate that logo even into one of the themes that you can download for Tumblr for free, or WordPress or whatever. I think that that's sort of a no-brainer if you have a brand, but if it's more of a, hey, I just kind of want to have a place for myself in many different places online that seem like they have a common look and feel going on, you can still achieve that through, you know, certain color combinations. That's probably what I would do. I don't care so much if my Twitter account matches any other place I'm online because, I don't know, I guess I'm just lazy, or just doesn't, that's not really important to me, but I do see a lot of people, even if they, you know, they don't have like a particular commercial brand to promote, they'll have maybe the same picture of themselves, you know, that's flattering or something with the same information kind of in as many places as you can find them online. All that information stays constant, and that's helpful. I don't know.
Yeah,
Amber, you do a little bit more, I think, probably brand management online than I do. What's your strategy?
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with you. I think it also is more important to focus on the content that you're sharing within your profile or bio section across these sites to make sure that that information is up to date and always up to date. Because remember, that's where, you know, people are going to get information about where to go to your website. And I think just think about your goals. You know, what do you want to get out of these different communities? And quite frankly, sometimes different communities, they lend themselves to different audiences. So maybe, you know, a really fun and casual photo on Twitter, that wouldn't work that well on LinkedIn if you want to attract a more professional audience. So just think about the different environments. I don't think everything has to match, but I think, you know, some consistency, but there is a little bit of freedom to mix that up once and again, as long as your information is consistent. I think that's the most important thing.
That's a really good point about having up-to-date information on yourself. I participated in it was a conference or there was some reason that someone needed a bio. But instead of asking me for my bio, they just took it upon themselves to find a bio of me online, which is fine, except that... And I don't remember where it was from, but it was some outdated bio that I had, you know, written that wasn't from my personal website and it wasn't from Wikipedia. And I read it and I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? What are they doing? And I realized that they had just found a bio that I had written, but I had forgotten to update somewhere else. So that was my fault, really. But yes, very good to make sure that stuff is constant so everyone has the right information on you.
Mm-hmm. Very important. Now, Sarah, this is a fun little add-on in our feedback section. I just stumbled across this, and we've talked a lot about voicemails on the show recently. Mm-hmm. We don't necessarily love voicemails, but we love getting voicemails from our listeners.
Yes.
This is, I guess you'd call him an artist, someone who decided to do almost like a voicemail project where he asked people to leave voicemails about, you know, positive things in their life. And he put them all together and created this just sort of a, I guess you would call it sort of a voicemail video. It's a voicemail set to music and kind of interesting.
All right, let's play it.
I realized the other day that I don't think there's a single ugly person in this world. I think everyone is so beautiful.
Bonjour, I'm calling from France. I just wanted to tell you how much I'm in love. I'm in love.
I've always thought of life as a kind of canvas and people as different colored paints. And each decorates your canvas in a different way.
There is no reason I cannot go forth and set the world on fire. I can. I will. And I must.
What I really hope One Hello World does is it kind of connects everybody in a way of there just being a greater understanding. You know, because understanding is it's really kind of the mother of compassion and sympathy. And if you could, I mean, if you could just take the 2.5 minutes it takes to listen to a single track and get this other person's perspective on what their life is like, maybe you understand them a little bit more. And ultimately, maybe we'll realize that we're all kind of the same. And we, a lot of us are dealing with a lot of the same struggles.
But just reconsider it. Your child is going to be a beautiful baby boy or girl and can do great things for this world if you just give him or her a chance.
You know, I feel like I probably take somewhat of the same approach that a film score composer would, where they really grasped the image that the person is painting with what they're talking about, and they try to reflect kind of the emotions that are happening in that scene or the emotions of the person talking and really try to reflect it in the music.
Happiness is many things.
I'm in love.
I love this.
I know, it's nice. It is very cool. And I guess the artist who created it, he had expected that, you know, a bunch of his friends would call in, but then he started getting more and more strangers who would call in and kind of define happiness through a voicemail. So Sarah, it's bringing me around. Maybe voicemails are a good thing. I've got to open up to them a little more.
Well, he's put something really nice together. At first I thought, well, what is, you know, it's like... inspirational voicemails, I don't know. But I see what he's getting at. I mean, the idea that it's just like, send a voicemail. And he said he was getting 100 a week, and then he was getting 400 a week. The calls were coming in from all over the world. And obviously, you heard just about half of the little video that we were sharing, that there people are talking about all sorts of different things. Sounds like he had a Kickstarter project, which was successfully funded. So he's working on a remastered album called The Listener. So it's sort of that type of look and feel and sound, I guess. But this is really really cool project.
It's very cool.
One of those things where you go, huh? Yeah, I mean, nobody has to do that, but the fact that somebody did, and he obviously cares, and he's moved by it, those always make the best projects.
It sure does. All right, Sarah, now time for our tweet of the week, and I almost don't want to share this because I'm sick of hearing about it. I'm not going to lie. So can we keep this to like the shortest tweet of the week of all time?
Sure.
But I thought we should just mention it. And although it's not that social, a lot of people in social media streams are talking about Research in Motion and how they've just named a new president and CEO. So our tweet of the week is from Research in Motion at BlackBerry, who has announced this. And since then, and my stream has been filled with people with their own comments about this happening. Is it going to save BlackBerry or isn't it? What's going to happen with, I think it's Thorsten Heinz is the new president and CEO now. So they kind of outed the other two who were involved.
Yeah, so they remain board members, but they are no longer co-CEOs or co-chairmen of the board. And I believe Thorsten was previously COO. So he's been with the company for a number of years, but sort of in the background. So for many people, it's like, oh, we're just hearing about him for the first time. I think he came from Siemens before this. But I actually, Amber, I know that you probably are sick to death of hearing about RIM getting a new CEO. And RIM has had sort of a crazy year, and a lot of people have been calling for this for a while. But I am just curious, because this is a big deal in Silicon Valley and here on Twit, because it's obviously very relevant to a lot of the products that we use and the stories that we cover. But since RIM is a Canadian company, do you feel like there's more of an emphasis on RIM news in your part of the world? Or because I feel like it's being covered ad nauseum, but I don't know if the rest of the U.S. would agree with me.
Yeah, no, you're exactly right. I mean, where RIM is based is not that far of a drive, you know, maybe an hour from where I live. And this has been one of the technology companies in Canada who's really thrived on a global level. So people have been following what they're doing, and people are so proud of RIM and all of the different BlackBerries and innovation that's been happening there. And so I think this news sort of, you know, personally, because I still do carry a BlackBerry, it sort of hits me, you know, with, oh, I'm so kind of sick of hearing about what's going to happen at RIM. Are they still going to be around, but also a little bit of sadness, if I can say that, in the sense that, you know, I don't know what the future looks like for RIM. I don't, you know, I worry a little bit, having had many of their phones and used the software, and then, you know, using Android phones as well as iOS. I just, you know, I'm concerned that they just can't necessarily keep up. And I hope that this move allows them to really maybe change and kind of, you know, step it up and do some more amazing things. I did hear the new president and CEO, I think it was a comment on a blog somewhere, where he said, well, you know, we're not going to shift course too much. We're going to be kind of doing more of the same. And I hope that they do shift course a little bit, because otherwise I think that, not that they'll be obsolete, but, you know, they're definitely not the leader that they once were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's, I think a lot of people are jumping on to the new CEO's first statement, really, that said, we're not going to do anything crazy here. Don't worry about it. Like, we're not talking about some major shift that's going to change everything at RIM. And some people saying, okay. And other people saying, but you need a major shift. What is wrong with you? But I think that we have to keep everything that's said in the first few days of any new CEO, especially when it comes to RIM, because this is something that's been sort of expected and called for, with a little bit of a let him maybe ease into something. He might be
give the guy a break,
right? Well, yeah, he might be planning all sorts of major changes, but I don't know that that's going to be the first thing that he says when he's speaking to the public as a CEO for the first time. I don't know, but that's what I would guess. Maybe.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with them. But I do believe that they need to kind of shift. I think they, I could talk for an hour about this. I won't. but I do believe that they started to focus for a while on being sort of this hip, you know, this really hip company. And they started working with celebrities to try to get them to use their phones, which did work. And I think really the reality is, if you're a BlackBerry user, what you love about the BlackBerry is just the email capabilities, in the sense that, you know, it's easy to keep up to date with emails. BBM is also a great feature. And there are things for kind of a working professional that there are people who are diehards who absolutely love it. And yet they almost, I feel like they kind of got, you know, they've got swayed a little bit, and they want it to go the direction of being like, you know, we have a smartphone too, and we can compete in this space. And I think they need to kind of pull back and focus on their core expertise, which is really that business audience, and continue to kind of nurture the relationship with that audience.
Well, new CEO, a new era, and Amber, I'm going to depend on you to give
me
all of my RIM news.
No problem.
Starting next week.
I'm here for you. I have every BlackBerry you could ever imagine in my house, I'm sure. So I will keep everyone updated. If you don't want to hear any more about RIM, though, you just let us know. Leave us a voicemail.
Yeah, that's true. In fact, if you don't know the voicemail number, but you think, this voicemail thing sounds pretty cool, I'd like to be on the show like Dan? Yes, Dan was earlier, who had the question about Twitter chats. 2626 social. So 2626 SOCIAL. That is indeed a Google Voice number. Just send us a message. 30 seconds or less is the sweet spot. And we'd love to hear questions, comments. You can also do that in video form if you're feeling brave and up to it. We don't, it's not a big deal. But you can upload a video to any video hosting site of your choice and send us the link. Or, of course, you can always just write us at thesocialhour@twit.tv. All right, before we get to our weekly rat or fad, we want to thank Ford for sponsoring. There's that. I knew my voice would start breaking. Eventually, Ford for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Some really exciting things going on at Ford right now. Two new vehicles that Ford is bringing some pretty crazy electric technologies to. The 2012 Ford Focus Electric and the 2013 C-Max Energy Plug-in Hybrid. Both models have regenerative braking system, which ends up capturing about 90% of kinetic energy that's lost in normal engines due to friction. So that's amazing. Lots of driver information systems, onboard stuff, helping manage the recharge process. You can remotely control vehicle charge, preconditioning settings. It's all sort of geared around maximizing energy efficiency. And Sync with My Ford Touch is driver-connected technology optimized for driving, configuring vehicle information such as fuel levels, battery power levels, miles per gallon, all of that stuff is at your fingertips. They have a smartphone app so you can access your vehicle status, such as how much charge do you have? Are you going to be able to make the drive that you're about to make? You have all that information remotely. And program charge settings for download vehicle data for analysis. If you're like a car nerd, this is like the perfect thing for you. And then value charging powered by Microsoft. This allows Ford customers to reduce electricity costs, which is very, very important when you have an electric vehicle, by taking advantage of off-peak or reduced rates. Depending on the time of day, that stuff matters. So the 2012 Ford Focus Electric also is an all-electric vehicle, fully charged in 3 to 4 hours. I mean, that's most people are at work longer than that. So it gives you a lot of flexibility. It's not as if it's one of those things where you have to charge for 10 hours and then you can only go a few miles or you have to charge again. Uses a 240-volt home charging station. And I could go on and on about this stuff. A lot of information there. Ford has done a very, very good job on their own site of laying out exactly what they're working on, what they have planned in the future, the car models that this applies to. Really good stuff. Ford.com/technology is the place to go to read to your heart's content about all the cool stuff that Ford is putting in the 2012, 2013 vehicles. And, of course, the vehicles of beyond of tomorrow. Ford.com/technology is the website to learn more about them. And thank you to Ford for sponsoring The Social Hour. And now on to Rad or Fad.
All right, Sarah. So we've talked a little bit over the past couple of weeks about Pinterest, a social network that's absolutely exploding. We also have talked about a Pinterest copycat called Pinspire, and there are many others. But I, until today, had not heard of this particular one, which is called Gentle Mint. It looks a lot like Pinterest, except this is like Pinterest for men. Because Pinterest is a little girly, Sarah. You probably agree. You know, lots of clothing and cats, I suppose. And this one has sort of, a different spin on collecting things you love, including things like the double shack burger, also grass flip-flops, a universal remote that's also a bottle opener. Yeah, it's pretty interesting. What can I say?
I actually kind of like that universal remote bottle opener.
Yes.
those are two things that go great together, as far as I'm concerned. Now, I guess I could be bent out of shape that this is marketed towards men and not women, but I don't have a problem with that. I like Gentle Mint. I'm sort of trying to figure out what the name means. What's the mint part of it? Mint as in,
I don't know,
a lot of products that you might pay for. Not really sure about that. Keep calm and hire Boba Fett. I would put that on my wall.
I know.
That's,
I feel,
hysterical.
Sarah, what does this say about, I'm not going to speak for you, but I think there's more things here that appeal to me than when I go on to Pinterest.
What does that say about us?
Is it? I don't know.
Are we tomboys, or are we just used to working with a lot of men, or Or these just generalizations about men that happen to apply to a lot of women, too?
Yes, it is definitely a different feel. There are a few things here that I think are pretty cool. I mean, it's also, there's a little bit of geek culture here that I feel like you don't get as much on Pinterest. And I think that's where we, you know, we're kind of drawn to that.
I think Pinterest is, and go to Pinterest.com if you didn't watch last week's show, because we talked about it in more detail than we're going to talk about now. If you're like, what is the comparison? But Pinterest has been a real hit. And a lot of my geeky friends say, oh, my friends aren't on Twitter. They're not on Google Plus. You know, they have a Facebook page they don't even really use, but they love Pinterest. Pinterest seems to really, really appeal not only to people who are, you know, geeky and like to play with apps, but people that are not geeky. And so that's probably why maybe Amber, you and I kind of go, Pinterest is cool, but I'm not seeing this got to go back multiple times a day type of a thing. But I feel like some of my, not just women peers, but mostly women peers feel about Pinterest, but something like Gentlemint does have a little bit more of that internet culture thing. And it appears a bit tongue-in-cheek, too.
Yes.
At some point, flip-flops, for example. I know. That's just sort of silly.
It's definitely entertaining. There's also a site out there. I think it's WTF Pinterest, which is sort of the more random things that you find in Pinterest. And this site has some randomness going on to it, too. Kind of cool. I think it's kind of rad, Sarah.
I do, too.
We've got a rad one on our hands.
I love Gentlemint. Gentlemint.com. Let us know if you guys like it, too. But I see nothing wrong with Gentlemint. I am into it. I like it very much.
Bookmark it.
I will. I'm going to do that right now.
It's a goodie. So, if you guys have any ideas for Rad or Fad, so please let us know and send us an email or a voicemail or let us know across any of the social media sites, because we're always looking for ideas.
Absolutely.
This is a good one, though.
This is a good one. All right. We've got a winner, Gentlemint. Amber and I love the stuff for dudes. What can we say? And with that, we're at the end of our social hour. Thanks to everybody who watched live, downloaded later, subscribe to our show every week. We appreciate all of you. We're so glad to have you. A reminder that we are live on Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. So join us live if you can. And if you can't, twit.tv/TSH is anything you ever wanted to know about us, where to find our videos, what we talked about in the show. That's pretty much it. the shows and everything that's in them will be
what
on our
website.
What
more do you need, Sarah? Really?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So thanks so much to everybody. Until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. We'll see you soon.
See you guys.
Free.